Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is David Murphy, publisher of the National Black Unity News. We're going to have a pretty unique conversation about the military. And the reason why I'm going this route this evening is because we lost a black general, General Colin Powell, today. I was on the computer early this morning when it flashed on there. And that all sorts of thoughts came to my mind. I have family members who made a career out of the military. I know quite a few people who have been in the military. And I have no clue of what it takes to achieve what he has achieved in the military. Because he went, I guess, from the guttermost to the uttermost, all the way from the bottom, all the way to the top man. And then he went on to other, you know, political things as well, you know. But he made a lot of achievement as far as man is concerned in his lifetime. So rest in peace, soldier. From my perspective, job well done. Now, everybody may not agree with me because, like I said, I've never been in the military. I don't know what you have to do, but I do know one thing. You have to take orders, and sometimes you have to give orders. And you follow through like that. But before we get into this conversation, I want to share with you a few things that's going on with the National Black Unity News newspaper. Then we're going to bring my brother on, Brother Satavi Jai, he who always has some great positive information to bring to us. But for those of you who know and for those of you who may not know, the National Black Unity News hard copy is now, and the online copy is now being circulated. And if you want to get a copy, all you have to do is call David Murphy at 443-455-2373, and I will make arrangements for you, you know, to get a subscription. And another thing, you can also go online to get and read the copy as well. But it's nothing like having this copy because our publication is unique in so many different ways that you would want a copy for to keepsake, because I believe we're actually creating history with the National Black Unity News. And this is one of the offspring, this podcast, or simulcast, as some may call it, is the offspring of the National Black Unity News. And we also host a Tuesday night podcast where we talk about the paper, how you can get involved, the unique people behind the scenes, the people, the editors in the publication who do fantastic work for a multitude of years. And so, so it's a great publication. And I truly believe, not because it's our publication, because we have information in here for us and it's by us. And in this day and time, we'll be getting 95% or 98% of it from outside resources telling us what's in the news, what to do, how to do it, what to wear, who's in style, who's not, what to eat, and everything else. That's what we've been bombarded with on a daily basis, and it's refreshing. Unfortunately, even some of the black press, you get pretty much, curated information that a lot of them is in lockstep with some of that, what they call general news. But with the National Black Unity News, you're getting information that will enhance your quality of life. You're getting information by people who have experienced life, who generally care about us, you melanated people. And so that is a major difference, and that's by design. So again, if you need a copy, you can go to our website. That's tnbun.com. Again, tnbun.com. And you can go to our archives and look at some of the previous publications. And another thing that took place over this past weekend, we celebrate the commemoration of the Million Man March. And it was started early in the morning at, I'm from Baltimore, in the park, when many brothers and sisters got together at sunrise. And because the Million Man March was deemed as a day of atonement for black men. And a lot of good things came out of that march because I was there. I seen the sea of men, black men. And, you know, of course, we were there for the entire day, and I see how we arrived, and I see how we departed. But in between time, with so much information was being put out there, not only about atonement, but to renew our mindset, to go back to our communities, our families, our homes, and make a change, make a difference. And many of us have been on that track ever since. But also, my partner, Mr. Editor-in-Chief, Mr. Bill Gooden, will be celebrating his birthday in a week, and he will be hosting an event at the Phase 2 Lounge, I mean restaurant, in Baltimore. And I'll put the information in the chat box about where you know if you would like to attend. And we also have, and I belong to an organization called Black Men Unifying Black Men. Well, there will be a brunch coming up on November the 6th, and we will be honoring 21 black men. And I'm going to encourage you, because of those of you who can attend, because it's going to be like a historical event. There's a lot of these men that's being honored, you know, has put in some work for many years. And they come from all types of services, from TV hosts, doctors, lawyers, I call them back in my day freedom fighters, and everybody else is in there. And they will have a program book. And because these people, if you want to do business in Baltimore or be involved in this historical event, that, you know, you can, and the advertisement is real cheap for the program publication. I mean, from $65 to the top ad is $400. But if you took out a business card or something, it would be good, because you never know in media who see you, who watch you, or who could utilize your services. And as I said before, a lot of these brothers that's going to be at this event are pretty much well-connected. So it's not how much you know sometimes, it's who you know. But in any case, you know, again, I want to welcome you all from who's on the Zoom call with us. I want to welcome you all who's already on Facebook Live. And we have also, I have put quite a few information in there to us about in these different groups on Facebook as well. It's a lot of groups, like even Black Men Unifying Black Men, it's on that as well. But that's why we call it a Simulcast. Then my brother Satabi Jai, he also is hosting and broadcasting live right now on Blog Talk Radio. And when this podcast is over today, we also circulate it all week long. So we never know who's going to be listening in, what kind of contribution going to make. We don't, how you say, pre-plan these podcasts, because we come to you live, raw, just as it is. And we like to keep it real. And tonight, I think it's going to get a little serious. But, you know, you're going to find out some things. I hope you're going to find out some things that you may have not known before. But it's a serious discussion that needs to take place. But before we do that, Brother Satavi, are you ready, sir?
Yes, sir, I'm ready.
You got it, sir.
All right, thank you, David. David said, you know, we got some interesting stuff to talk about tonight. As we do each and every week when we come on here, we do a reading from Daily Motivations for African-American Success. And, you know, we definitely need to motivate ourselves in the times that we're living in and the things that are going on in our community in particular, but in the world in general. So our reading for the night. The eyes have it. In search of my mother's garden, I found my own. Alice Walker, Pulitzer Prize-winning author. The lady was small, old, and frail. She had just lost the sight of her eye and had to have it removed. When she learned it had to be replaced with a false eye, she said to the doctor, "Be sure to choose one with a twinkle in it." How wonderful it is to know that we can be transformed, healed, and revitalized in the twinkle of an eye. Miracles become apparent when we open our eyes to a new dimension of life. The next time you feel weak, tired, lifeless, or down in the dumps, affirm for yourself, quote, "I am radiant with life and vitality, unquote. Even as you speak, know that you have a life that is larger and deeper than the one you are experiencing. Speak these words repeatedly and joyfully, then give true meaning by acting as if you really believe them to be true now. In so doing, you will open the floodgates, allow more of life to pour into you. My eyes are the windows of my soul. I see only perfect pictures. And it's important, you know, again, how we see the world, how we view the world, and through what lenses that we look at the world and how we take in information. And, you know, there's always a saying, if you believe you can't, then you're right, you won't. If you believe you can, then you will. So, you know, like life has a lot to do with what we feed our minds and what we allow our eyes to behold and see. So it's important that we give ourselves clear vision as we move forward in this unique experience called life. Back to you, David.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, I was unmuting myself. But in any case, I appreciate you, sir. Powerful stuff, man, and it's just what I needed to hear. But getting to this conversation, like I said, I woke this morning to some news about General Colin Powell that he passed on. And immediately my mind just wonders And here, you know, lately in the last, I guess maybe because of my age or something like that, but it seemed like in the last 3 or 4 years, we had lost quite a few people who are pretty much well-known from the entertainment, sports, and, you know, fields, scientists and now generals, military. You know, it just seemed like people are just leaving this earth in a rapid pace. But when I said they, most of the people I was speaking about was people with some type of fame, fortune, or something. And they made their contributions while they was here. And General Powell, even when I first heard of him, I was in the struggle, in the movement, as some may call it. And I don't fully understand politics all the time. Diplomacy and when to engage, when not to, on a global basis. But I do know a little bit about military because I have a brother and a sister-in-law who made a career out of it. And oftentimes I would listen to their stories. You know, through their eyes, I used to go all over the world. You know, they've been here, they've been there, but, you know, they've been in war zones and Germany's, Korea's, and all of these different places. And myself, I never, like I said, I never been in the military because back in my time, you know, they were drafting people, and I was drafted, but I raised so much cane that they took me off the bus, so to speak. But that's another story. But in any case, but when I heard of Colin Powell, and heard of some of his accomplishments, how he moved up in the ranks. And then when he came out the military, I mean, he went from the bottom all the way to the top, pretty much. And then even afterwards, he became an ambassador. I'm not ambassador, but he was selected by heads of state to do this and to do that. He had 3 or 4 different things that he got involved with. But, and I start wondering, what was it like for him to go through all of them years of military, all the things he had to go through, taking orders, giving orders. And the first thing came to my mind when I got off the bus, because that's what the main issue I had, was that they was fighting in Vietnam when they drafted me. But yet, here in the United States, we were fighting on another front. You know, why should we be over there fighting? We was right here at home being discriminated against. It seemed like our enemies wasn't over there. It seemed like we had quite a few enemies right here at home. And so consciously, you know, some things I just never figure out. but some things just don't appear to be right to me. But I do believe that it's necessary to have military. That's just my thought, because everybody needs to protect their homes, their families, their cities, and yes, and their countries. Because there are people who will pillage, take advantage. If you're not prepared to defend yourself, we'll take advantage of you. And so I see the need for a military. But here we are in the United States of America. Some say we're the most powerful nation on earth. But yet we have so many challenges ourselves. I'm talking about being black. That's what I talk about, being black melanated. And so we have several people on here who have some experience in the military. So tonight I just wanted to get a feel for how it was for a black person to be in the military, first and foremost, some of the experience here from a black perspective, what you had to go through sometimes, mentally, physically, and spiritually. And when you got deployed to go overseas and all of this, but we know, did you ever question yourself, why, what for, how come? But I do know there's great opportunities. People learn trades. And I mean, it's so well-rounded. But, you know, everybody, just like opinions, everybody has their own ideas, their own experiences, their own perception of it. But based on Colin Powell, And I wasn't there. Most likely you weren't there either. You know, what he had through, his cross is his. He had to bear his own cross, so to speak. But for those of you who's online with us this evening, while people are talking about Colin Powell, I sit there half the day listening to other people express what they thought about Colin Powell, what his ups and what his downs was, but their opinions of him. And I've seen a few black people came in there, you know, and that, you know, he mentored a lot of people and things like that. But in this podcast, you know, we like to keep it real. And sometimes on this podcast, things get a little deep and the truth prevails sometimes. You know, people share things that otherwise you would never know. And that's what we're about, putting out information. And so before I bring on some of the people that's already here in our panel, those of you may have military, you only have to have military to participate in this conversation, but your thoughts about it is important as well. But Brother Satavi.
Yes, sir.
You're the co-host, and you had some military experiences as a young man.
Yes,
how long was you in the military, and very briefly, as a black person, what was your take about the military from your way of thinking, sir?
I served in the military for 2 years, and that included a tour of duty in Vietnam. And I remember when I went in, he didn't want me to go. Matter of fact, he didn't sign for me. My mother signed for me. He didn't want me to go because he says, I know you. He said, I know your spirit. He said, you don't like taking orders. And he was right, you know what I mean? And because he had experienced being in the military, and we were supposed as a family be able to move to Cuba, but we didn't make that move to Cuba because my father ended up getting demoted for beating up a white guy who had killed the dog that my father had got for me as a young boy that I would have had when I got to Cuba. So, you know, that's one experience, you know, and the other side is that, you know, I remember being in boot camp, and when I was in boot camp, it was this white guy. I was made a squad leader because I had spent time being a Boy Scout, and they needed somebody that knew how to march. So I was made a squad leader, and I had to give orders. And this white guy, you know, I had to give orders, and I was giving orders, and I told him what he had to do for the weekend, you know, which was, you know, everybody had to do what we call compartment cleaning. Compartment cleaning is basically you had bathroom duty as far as cleaning the toilets and the other stuff. And so I gave him his assignment. And he told me, he said, man, I don't take no orders from no niggas. And I remember telling our company commander, you know, his remarks. And he ended up having to do a weekend, what they call a weekend of EMI, extra military instruction. And so he had to do push-ups and all kind of other crazy stuff. Because the company commander, in this case, he stood behind me and said that, you know, we don't have no niggas in the military. He said, you know, black people have paid their dues, and you know, you've earned your stripes, young man. And what he said to you was disrespectful, and we're gonna punish him for that. And so that was, you know, an incident there. And then I got stationed aboard, coming out of boot camp, I got stationed aboard the USS Constellation, CVA 64, attack aircraft carrier. And that's when I experienced the Vietnam War. And I became a conscientious objector while being in the military, because I used to sit on the side of the ship at night and look off the side of the ship, and I could see the coastline light up because of the airplanes that we would launch. And the they called them Saudis, which was the airstrikes, and they'd be dropping napalm on the Vietnamese, and it would light, you know, the napalm would light the sky up. And so, you know, I said, no, I can't be co-signing the death of these innocent people. And I remember Muhammad Ali saying, hey, no Vietnamese ever called me nigger. And so that had a lot of impact on me becoming a conscientious objector while, like I said, while being in the military and ultimately getting discharged from the military. I still got my benefits and stuff. But, you know, that sort of sums up my experience of the military and the taking. And Colin Powell had to do a lot to go from a private all the way up to a general. I mean, so he had to take, you know, and they you know, they said, you know, there's a saying in the military that shit flows downhill, not uphill. So, you know, he had to take orders from people. He had to do a lot of stuff. And then he got played by the Bush administration on this whole thing of weapons of mass destruction in terms of Saddam Hussein. And they never found no weapons of mass destruction. And Bush had him lead the argument that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And, you know, and people respected Colin Powell a lot because, you know, he was very articulate. He spoke well, which, you know, he had to as a, you know, coming out of that background being a general. So, you know, there's a lot of different perspectives on, was Colin Powell a war hero or was he a criminal? Because he was involved in the massacre at My Lai, which, you know, a lot of innocent Vietnamese people were slaughtered. But he had to give orders. He had to take orders. And so, you know, there's a whole different twist in perspective about life being in the military, you know what I mean? There's orders that you have to give at times that you might question. And there's orders that you have to take at times that you might question. But the bottom line is that orders are given. If they're not followed, then, you know, it can cause a lot of harm to innocent people. And I'm pretty sure everybody's seen the movie A Few Good Men, where Tom Cruise got Jack Nicholson to break down with his famous saying, told him, you can't handle the truth. And in most cases, the majority of people, you know, in terms of life and understanding the military, they can't handle the truth, you know. And Malcolm used to say, the truth will set you free. But, you know, the thing is, the bottom line is, what is the truth? And what truth can you handle? And what truth can you cannot handle? So that's my two cents on the whole thing in terms of Colin Powell and military and everything else, because, you know, the orders are given and someone has to follow them. And if you don't follow them, there's consequences. You know, you can end up going in the military. The Navy, we had what was called a brig. They put you in jail if you don't follow orders. In the Army, they called the
stock. Yeah, well, Yeah, like I say, even civilians, there's consequences behind every decision that's being made. You know, whether you think of it or not, they always going to be a consequence to whatever thought or action you take. But I see a hand raised.
I'm trying to get it off of there.
Okay. Did you want to speak about some things about the military, Colin Powell, anything? What's on your mind?
No, I'm familiar with what happened. I guess my purpose was just to see what the meeting was about this afternoon,
mm-hmm.
and how are we doing with the unification of putting things together as a whole. I had some comments on that, but I was really just trying to get my yellow hand off of here and didn't know how.
Okay.
So when we get back to that, I guess, you know, what the agenda was, then I'll tell me how to take this thing down. But I'm working. Oh, there you go.
We got it. Yeah, okay, yeah, we got you. So it's no problem. I thought it was something urgent that you wanted to say, so that's why I put you in there. But I'll come back to you. I'll come back to you, give you an opportunity to speak what's on your mind, okay?
Okay.
All right. Now, as I mentioned earlier, that my brother, who's the general manager of the National Black Unity News, has made a career. He made a career out of the military. And I'm going to bring him on. Mr. Murphy, can you unmute yourself? I'm going to ask you a few questions, you know, because like I said, you had so many years that you invested your life in for you know, in the military. And first and foremost, why did you go into the military, and why did you stay in the military? That's the first question.
First question is I'm like Satawi. I'm one of them old guys that was back in the day when they were being drafted. And unfortunately for me, you know, I wasn't all gung-ho. I was sort of like you, David. You know, I grew up, you know, we come from the same line, okay? But you know, it's ironic when you don't have the ability to not go into the military. In other words, when I was coming up, you had to have a real good excuse not to be drafted. You got over, David, for some way, shape, or form. I don't know what you did, but I don't know. I'm going to talk about
that. I was a rebel, that's all.
Well, David, you know, I was maybe a little bit more subdued than you, however. I was kind of a radical, too, as you know. But,
yeah.
Fortunately for me, I tried to not go into the military by playing death in my left ear and really kind of failing that what you call the ASVAB test. And so that's the test to determine how smart you are. And I really kind of like, you know, just below the threshold of what most folks get in the military. So I felt as though that when I first got in, that I wasn't going to plan on staying in. It wasn't my cup of tea. It wasn't anything. The military was the farthest thing from my mind, but I got to tell you something. And you may not remember this, David, but I kept hearing this little voice in the back of my mind. And this is from my father, who was in World War II. And I had an uncle who was in the Korean War, who I idolized big time. His name was Lemuel Murphy. And they were, to me, they were gods. I mean, my father and my uncle. And and what I will tell you is that I remember my father, and I was like 14, maybe 15 years old. And I can remember the same voice saying, I wish I had stayed in. I wish I had stayed in the military. Now, I'm all against it now. Don't get me wrong. I'm gung-ho. I'm 1968, all of that. I went in 1969, and I will tell you that the military was really not that great. I'm being upfront with you. And one of the things that was not so great is the fact that we were in a war that was very unpopular. We were in a location where it was hot, sticky, and miserable just about every day. If it wasn't raining or whatever, it was hot and sticky and full of bugs, okay? So that's one thing, and that's Vietnam we're talking about. What I want to share with you mostly is the difference between Vietnam, when I first went in the military, my first war, as to when I got out of the military. It was my last war, which was Desert Storm, which Colin Powell was pretty much in charge of, and which I was quite impressed with, only because of the fact that I had this experience with Vietnam, and I knew what the Vietnam War was like, and I was a supplier. I was a logistician. I was a supply sergeant. And I wasn't just any old supply sergeant. I was a supply sergeant for the 1st Cav, and I had to cover the entire 1st Cav, the whole brigade, all over Vietnam, from 1969 all the way up to 1970, when the 1st Cav really left Vietnam. I was only there for 1 year. But that last year, it was, I had to make sure that all the beans, bullets, clothes, anything that they needed, my organization was the one to make sure that they were the ones that had, we were responsible for all classes of supply. And I will tell you that we did a good job. I mean, as a soldier in the United States Army, I realized how important it was for our soldiers to not miss a meal, not have all the bullets that they needed, to have the tires on their trucks. All of those things were vital. I'm telling you this for a reason, because in Vietnam, there was a lot of bottlenecks and a lot of problems. But in Desert Storm, where Tozen Paul was in charge, totally different ballgame. When I say totally different, I literally mean different. I experienced Vietnam, going to Vietnam and what Vietnam was like, and then I went to Desert Storm. First of all, something important had changed between Vietnam and the Desert Storm. In Desert Storm, it was an all-volunteer army. All-volunteer army. There was no draftees in the army in 1990. If you were drafted when you first came in, you wind up re-enlisting by then. So there was no draftees in Desert Storm, and it showed. Those soldiers performed like night and day, and mostly because of leadership. And when I say that, in Vietnam, we had an engagement policy, but we had no exit strategy. In Desert Storm, we had an exit strategy. We had a plan of attack, but also a way of getting out of that conflict. And we did it. It was one of the best managed conflicts in the last 100 years that I know of. As far, even all the other little skirmishes around the world did not go off as well as, from my perspective, as did Desert Storm. A lot of people say we should have went farther, but that wasn't a part of the plan. So all I want to share with you is that as a soldier, I realize what it takes to have different types of leadership and what the outcomes will be. Colin Powell was amazing when it comes down to his understanding of what the war was about. He was amazing when it comes down to how it was executed, and even more amazing is how the soldiers supported it. I got to tell you, there's been a lot of black generals and a lot of white generals running around the world, but very few had the respect. And when I say respect, I literally mean respect of a Colin Powell, because to me, he was not the greatest general of all time, but I can't think of one that was really better. And so all I want to share with you folks is that I know that some people have different attitudes and ideas about Colin Powell, and as far as his participation in the military, I guarantee you, and for the folks who I know that knew him, I'm talking about, you know, a lot of folks that knew him, I don't want to put no names out there, who worked with him, they all seem to appreciate his presence and all seem to appreciate what he's done and the way he did. And one of the things I also want to say is that he was sort of like somebody else who may come on this call this evening. There is a lady that David's going to probably introduce by the name of Kathleen Murphy. I know her extremely well, and I know her story because I traveled, I lived her story with her. It was an unusual but an amazing story. All I'm going to tell you is that as a black officer in the United States Army, it seemed like every one of her positions, she was not only a black soldier, but a female soldier on top of that. And you talk about a rough road to hoe. Colin Powell's role was probably as tough, but I'm sure that hers was as tough, if not tougher. And all I want to share with you guys is that, yes, there's racism in the military, but one of the things I do must tell you is that it's a totally different atmosphere as of 1969 when I came in. I've watched the military grow, and they are not tolerant of stupidity, ignorance, bigotry, and racism. If it exists, they're supposed to get away with it, but very, 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 very few. Because one of the first places that was segregated as far as the United States is concerned was our military. I don't hold them in the highest esteem of all of that, this and that and the other. There are people doing the job. What I will tell you is that, like David said earlier, without the military, I don't know where we would be. And so all I want to share with you guys is that when it comes down to our military, I respect them. I love what they've done these last few years, other than the fact that they've worn our soldiers out with this Desert Storm thing over and over and over again. But when it comes down to Colin Powell himself and his relationship to the soldiers and what he's done for this nation, it's no comparison. No comparison at all. And so I there is a number of things that I can say about him and go on and on about the military, this and that. He has all the nuances that affects us in the military. But I want to tell you this, that at the end of the day, Colin Powell was a good man and a good soldier from the folks that worked for him. And that's what I want to share with you guys. Back to you, Dave.
All right. Thank you, man. And you know, earlier, you know, like I said, you and I have talked many times about your military experience, because we use that to analytics sometimes to, you know, when we talk about certain things, we use your experiences sometimes. But you mentioned, I mentioned to you, I didn't go in there and in the military. And guess what? You was the one of the main reasons why I didn't go.
Why is that?
Because I was pissed that you was in Vietnam.
I hear you, man.
Over
thank
there fighting it, and I'm catching hell over here. You know, I think, you know, I'm mad about that, you know. And you ain't going to send me over there. So, you know,
I'm glad you didn't know. I'm glad you didn't know, really.
So that was one of my experiences. But Miss Kathleen Murphy, I want you to unmute, because your story, to me personally, you was the first person that really came to my mind when Colin Powell, you know, passed this morning, because I heard some of your story. I do know this about you, though. You don't like to talk about, you know, from my perspective, about your rank and everything. You know this. I don't know if it's bad memories or what you had to go through, but I'm gonna tell you this. But I'm gonna tell you this. Could you first explain, when you retired from the middle, what was your rank?
Hello, can you hear me, David?
Yes, I can.
That was my rank. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I was a lieutenant colonel.
And what is that in the military? What kind of status is that?
Well, it just means that you arrived to the rank of lieutenant colonel, and the next rank would be colonel, then the next rank would have been general.
Well, so you were right next to a general,
first,
right?
Second lieutenant, first. No, well, close.
Real close.
It's a colonel in between, and then a general. And I served 20 years in the military, all active duty.
And when you joined the military, what was your rank?
Second lieutenant.
Okay. Now, this is what I want to ask you. Because I brought out those questions because, you know, I want people to know that you had to go from lieutenant all the way up to, was it that second colonel, what you said you called
it? You go from second lieutenant to first lieutenant to captain, then to a major, and then to a lieutenant colonel, and then colonel, and then general.
Okay. So, you know, and Mr. Murphy just, you know, mentioned that the military has so many great benefits attached to it, but it has its headaches as well, especially not only for a black man, but for a black woman. And during this, even this day and time, you know, be straight up about, you know, here, we're still catching it because of the color of our skin. Now, I can't even imagine what it was like in the military, especially when you yourself had to go through the ranks, move up in ranks. And I can imagine if it was anywhere near office politics, the backbiting, the jealousies and all other kind of stuff that you may endure. People don't want to respect you as a woman, as a black person, all of that kind of stuff that you had to probably, what they do in the office anyway. Even your own people may have turned on. You know, I'm just saying, you know, just because it is. Go ahead, Kathleen.
Let me say this to start off with, to answer your first questions. You know, why did I go in to the military?
Mm-hmm.
I went in the military for equality. I had tried so hard in the corporate world, in the federal government jobs to advance. I was advancing, yes, I was doing okay. Progress was happening, but it wasn't fast enough for me because I was a hard worker, and I thought an effective worker also. And so I was ready to move to the next job right away, but I couldn't get there. I didn't know anyone. This is during the time of the early 70s. I didn't know anyone in the right places. I just didn't have that extra pull to get in the door. The federal government, yes, and for most people, they would have been satisfied, but it was not enough for me. I wanted equality. So I went in. I didn't really plan to go into the military. That was all that's what happened. And I did go in, and I had planned to stay in for 2 years. And the plan was to get out and go back to school and get my master's. That was my little plan. But God had a different plan. And on my first assignment, as a second lieutenant, I realized that I had no power. You know, especially, again, being female in that environment. This is right after the Vietnam War. I came in 1975. And when I came in, the women were in a separate category called the Women's Army Corps. So initially we didn't do anything with the men. And then soon after, things merged, and we started exercising with the men and being trained with the men. But it was two separate divisions there. So I did go in, and I decided to stay past the 2 years because I realized that I couldn't help anyone as a second or first lieutenant. No power, no decision making. I just had to follow the ones in front of me. Even though I was an officer, I had little or no power. And again, female, black, all of that, and all of those numbers being lowest on the pole for rank, all that, what I did every single day. So a few things happened, and I saw a lot of unfair things happening, and I thought, I can't change anything today, but if I stay in, one day I'll be able to make a difference. And you know what? I made a decision based on one person being told no to something, and I had to tell that soldier no, that they weren't going to help her. And I decided I'm going to stay in. If I get out, I can't help her or someone else. So I decided to stay in, made that decision, and I stayed in for 20 years. And I will tell you that the stories are unbelievable, the things that I was able to do, where God placed me, things that happened as a result of me staying in. From the time I went in 1975 until I departed the military and retired in 1995, many, many cases, I'm still looking around the room, and I'm the only black, the only female in the room in 1995. Nothing changed in 20 years. Now, racism, as my husband said, I didn't feel the racism. We went continually to what we called race relation classes. I'm not saying it wasn't there, but my bigger problem, trust me, was gender. It was being female for me. Now, Colin Powell, I just want to briefly say what I have to say about General Colin Powell. He did have a lot of respect. People loved him. They adored him. But the one thing that stands out when I look back, because I wasn't under him at any particular time that I can speak of, that I can say this happened and that happened, but I have a relationship just from a distance with him. Back in the early 90s, I'm not sure what position Mr. Powell was in at this time, but he did an interview from his office, and he had in the background a picture of a Buffalo soldier. And let me tell you, the respect and recognition and power that he had, those pictures went off the roof. You couldn't find one. Every officer I knew was out trying to find that artwork that Mr. Powell had behind his desk. There were several pictures of the Buffalo Soldiers. I did a couple of them. I never was able to acquire, it was called Tracking Victorias. If you were to go online and look at that artwork that Mr. Powell made, he really made it famous. And that's because it was just right hanging in the back of his desk on the wall. That's the power that man had. He was highly thought of. If he said it, you know, it was gold pretty much. And that's my relationship. I think back, and that's what I remember about him with a smile. He introduced me to the black art that was out there with the Buffalo Soldiers, and it was precious. And so I'm going to leave with that to say that I am going to write a book about my story, and it is a story. Some of it is humbling. That's why I talk about it a lot. Some of it is sad. Some of it is good, but God put me there. So I'm not coming, but I will be writing a book about it. So thank you, Dave, for giving me the opportunity to say that.
All right. Thank you so much, because, you know, a person like a Colin Powell, yes, you know, like you say, evidently he had to do some remarkable things to get to where he was.
Yeah.
I don't care what society you're in, and especially here in America, you had to do some serious stuff, twice as good, three times as good, everything else, before, you know, before they recognize you sometimes. But, you know, I appreciate him so much for his accomplishment. Because, you know, as they say, this glass ceiling, as some people call it, well, he kind of broke it, and because he became the top-ranking soldier in the country. And so he commanded the whole, I mean, that's some powerful stuff there, you know. And then he was dealing with the heads of states and stuff, you know. So he, you know, so and what I was hearing on the news all day long, how diplomatic he was. But, you know, but it something says to me that stuck out, and Brother Satavi mentioned it, you know, because you have to receive, you know, you give orders and you take orders. And you rely on your fellow men for information, just like with the National Black Unity, you know, people, you know, if I start putting stuff in there, in the paper, so many people will believe it. I can pick on any one of you right now and say, I heard through a reliable source. Now, you can't sue me because I say I heard through a source. That's a simple word, because I heard from a reliable source, and I don't have to reveal who that source is. But you may want to hurt me, but I can say some unsavory things about you, have some bullet points, and I can actually destroy a lot of your lives through media, just through a rumor. Alive, just speak straight up about it. And do you know so many people will believe because it's in media, it's in the press, even some of the people closest to you will turn on you. That's how powerful media is, propaganda is, playing with people's minds is. You know, it's a powerful, powerful thing. And so that's why I'm just going to make just a suggestion. Be careful what you say and who you say it to. And you know, and guard your mind, stay alert. But in any case, getting back to this subject, because they were talking about this quite often, because you know how they do us in media. I don't care what your achievements was, how good. You know, you heard about the Michael Jackson, the Michael Jordan, the Oprah Winfrey's. You heard about everybody who made some type of notoriety in this country has been slandered in the media. All of their great accomplishments, they're always going to say, but he was this, he was that, or we believe he did this, or he did that, or he said this, or he made this, even to the point where he was born in Africa. The president of the United States, little thing, but you know, and so many people, the birth of thing, so many people will take it up and run with it. That's how powerful media is. And for those of you who work with us in the media, that's why I say it's a powerful, powerful truth, because you never know who's listening or whatever. But getting back to this thing where he received some bad information, and he ran with it, and he put himself out there through through the whole world. I think it was what they call that place where all the heads of state come together.
The Hague.
Huh?
The Hague.
Well, that's, there was no, the place. I'm talking about where the leaders from representatives come from.
Yeah, but the United Nations.
United Nations. That's where he was at when he sat out there in confidence that they had weapons of mass destruction. And he put himself on his reputation. Now, you can tell he's a man of pride, a man of his word. And he relies on that, you know. But he came back, but see, most people wouldn't have. Most of them folks would not have humbled themselves, or they would have made some type of excuse. Well, they told us this, that, but you know. But that was the main thing that struck out. But he humbled and said he was wrong. Straight up. I was wrong. I got some bad information. Straight up. And that says a lot about his character. And so You know, rest in peace, soldier. You know, job well done, as far as I'm concerned. But if there's some folks who are on here, like I said, I've never been in the military. And if you like to, because, see, it's important that we have dialogues like this, because, like I said before, based on what I was hearing on CNN, NBCS, whatever they call them stations, you know, I flipped a lot. And then I went on Fox 45. You know, I do all of these things because that, this day and time, media is so kept, it's so brought by certain groups of people. They talk about the same person, but it was almost night and day in some of the subjects. Some focus on the decision that he made, that he lied to us. And some of them ran with that. That was their conversation. Now, all the accomplishments that his brother did, one of those stations, they focused on that one subject. All the good, they focused on that one, even though he came back and piled up. But they knew what happened, but that's part of propaganda, to bring us down. And so to anybody on here, the mics are open now. The floor is open. And if you'd like to share, if you've been in the military or why you didn't go in, what was the purpose of it? And if you have any thoughts on our good brother who no longer is with us anymore, Colin Powell, because what I was about to say is this. Small as we are on this 11 people on here, we don't know how many people on Facebook, how many people on Blog Talk Radio or the other things, but this will be circulating, and you never know who's listening to us. But see, words are so powerful, so powerful. When you share sometimes, from your thoughts, it's going to be totally different from somebody else's. But what you say sometimes to someone, just listening, just your thoughts sometimes, but had that much power to make a person say, well, a young man may, or a young woman say, well, you know, I was thinking about going to the military, you know, but because things are so rough out here, you know, that's why a lot of people went in sometimes, you know, because things were kind of rough on the outside. But sometimes even myself, I wished I had went in. Just for the discipline, you know, just to arrange your life, you know, because I met a lot of military people. I seen when they went in, how they was when they went in. But when they came out, they had a little different swag about them. You know, they were a little bit more confident, you know. And, I mean, they just seemed more sure of themselves, you know. And I noticed stuff like that, you know. But in any case, I could have used that discipline real bad at the time. At that time, 18 and 19 years old. But in any case, the doors of the church are open. That's what they say in church. No, but the mic is open.
Mr. Mayor, if I might, I'd like to speak if I could.
Yes, sir.
There it is.
I salute those who came before me, the brothers, Sister Murphy, Brother Murphy. I salute those. I spent 20 years in the Air Force. I had it different from them. I'm sorry?
No, go ahead.
No, he said something. I want to hear what he said.
I said, no, David, I was just really giving him some accolades. The Air Force, as far as I'm concerned, was much better than the Army, the Navy, and the Marines combined. Go ahead.
I had it much different. I say I had it much different than all of them. I came after most of them who served. I joined in 1985 and I served until 2005. I had it a lot different. I worked in a hospital. I had a clean uniform. I ate 3 square meals every day. I had a room every day. So I had a difference from them, and I salute those who didn't. I really do that. I got activated. I got sent to England in 1991 for Operation Desert Shield, which we was told that at that point we're going to be there for a year. And since I was a medical unit, expect a lot of casualties. But when I heard about the Colin Powell, Colin Powell was in charge, I mean, we knew that we had confidence in that man. I mean, and I'm in the Air Force. I had confidence in General Powell that he's going to get the job done. And when we got cut short because it didn't last a year. It only lasted 3 months. I mean, and it was the shock and awe, and we was out of there. It was amazing to see what they did under the leadership of that general of Colin Powell, General Colin Powell. I was, as an Air Force person, I was in that man, and I was extremely proud of what he did and what the troops underneath him did. We didn't see the kind of soldiers, we didn't see the kind of injuries that we expected to see. And I am so proud of that, you know, and so I just wanted to share that with you. I mean, I had a different experience. My experience was totally different from those who came before me. I didn't see Vietnam. My wartime experience came in 2001 on September 11th at the United States Pentagon. That's where my wartime experience came in at, because I was there at the Pentagon on 9/11 when that plane or whatever they say hit that building. I was there as a medical personnel. I had to try to help go in there and do search and rescue of the soldiers and people in that building. So that was my wartime experience. That was, you know, so I had it different from everybody else. So just want to share that with you.
Well, I'm glad you did, because, you know, just the way you explained it, you know, gave me another step of pride in that brother, too. You know, the accolades that you shared about him, you know, see, that's extremely important. You know, like I said, I like to keep it real. You know, even back in the time of slavery, you know, they always had some brothers who, or sisters who were strong, who organized, who led the slaves, you know, how to manipulate, how to get around this and how to get around that. And see, I'm talking about leadership now. And for what I was listening to today from them, but now hearing it from you all, puts it in another place. And I know we keep it real. And so, General Powell, one thing everybody had in common, this brother earned his respect. From them, I'm talking about from them, they had one thing they could pick on with that decision, but everything else was in, I mean, this brother, he was a force to be reckoned with. And they said how diplomatic he was, and he knew how to get the job done. And so that's why afterwards, two or three presidents snatched that brother up and put him on their team. And from another perspective that we have not talked about yet, this says volumes to me. I know he had to be a decision maker to be in his position, but he was not afraid to speak his mind. I've seen when the time came, when Barack Obama ran for president, even though he was classified as Republican and things like this, he said, I want him, you know, because even him, he himself was going to run for the presidency one time.
Right.
You know, and before you even have a mindset like that, talking about running for the president, even thinking about running, you know, for the president of the United States, you're not a newcomer. You know what's out there in the climate, what's going on around the world, what's going on with racial situations and everything like that. You got all of that under your belt, and he got all that straight out of the military. But you know, I have to give accolades to a person not only for his accomplishments, but for his character, though. And you know, and he even spoke up, even though at the time he was transitioning from being a Republican. When Donald Trump came on the scene, he called a spade a spade. Whatever it is, he said this man ain't right. He told y'all that, you know, and he seen how his party that he chose to be in was moving in that direction, and he got out of it. That was it. You know, he can't be part of nothing like that. But in any case, ladies and gentlemen, we around that time. But before, is she still on board with us? Miss, here we go. Okay, oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I thought I muted myself. But in any case, anybody have any closing remarks or comments they would like to make on this subject matter, or you have something else on your mind before we shut it down? The mic is open. All you have to do is unmute yourself.
Yeah, real quick, tomorrow afternoon at 7:30, there's going to be a Zoom meeting. Those individuals who are normally contacted will be. For those individuals who are seeking to be a part of our Tuesday night call, please get in contact with me, David. Put your name in the chat so we can get you the link so that you can be a part of this wonderful program that we have on Tuesday afternoons. It's quite different from the night. It is more geared towards those individuals who are actually involved as a writer an author or an editor or an advertiser with the National Black Unity News. So again, if you want to be a part of that, please put your name in the chat, this and that and the other, and does not get in contact with me, David, or Kathleen Murphy, or Fran Allen, any one of the three of us, four of us rather, and we will make sure that you get a chance to be able to participate with that program. Back to you, David.
Okay. I see Vernon, you have your hand, your thumb up, sir. You got it. Unmute yourself, sir.
I was just giving a thumbs up for the Colin Powell picture that was put up.
Oh, okay. You're talking about Brother James Silver. Okay. Yeah, that is nice. Yes, sir.
Uh-huh.
You know, we used to sing a song about the Buffalo Soldiers. What do we call the Last Poets?
Yeah.
Yeah. And powerful song. My little young brother used to sing it all the time in a group. But in any case, Sister Lolo, you said earlier you want to say something in closing, that you want to share something was on your mind. Can you unmute it? Or did you unmute it? It looked like she had. Okay, she may not. I don't see a microphone. But in any case, anybody else in departing? Well, again, I'm going to say thank you to each and every one of you for your participation tonight. And I want to give honor to our departed brother, General Colin Powell, for the work he's done, not only military, but you know he's done it for all of us. He represented us real well. Yes. Yes.
Excuse me. I just wanted to say that I'm blank on the name of the gentleman that had the picture of the Buffalo Soldiers, but I want to say that's the picture, Mr. James, thank you. That's the picture that I'm referring to, that Colin Powell, did you see the background of the picture that was up with the soldiers just a while ago? That's the famous picture.
Yeah, Tracking Victoria.
Buffalo Soldiers. It was Tracking Victoria, and it was Colin Powell. It was already out, but for the most part, most of us really didn't know anything about that.
Well, that just goes to show you the National Black Unity News got some resourceful people, man. they just show up and show out, you know. So, like I say, man, this is for those of y'all who don't know. I'm grinning because if you don't know, and hopefully you will know, because most people do know, that the culture behind this publication is growing, and it's a family type atmosphere. We have grown to respect one another, love one another, and support one another. That is the true power behind the National Black Unity News. And that's why I encourage you, if your heart is in the right place and you have the heart to serve and you care about people, then maybe you need to give us a call and get involved with us, because as you know, just like with General Powell, you know, that brother had work to do and he did his job well. But just like the most of you, y'all generals in your own right. And you know, and if you're out there putting in work and helping people, then more people need to know about you, because so many people need your help, need your expertise, and just sometimes just need your love that you generally care. And this morning, I'm just going to share this story with you. A young lady called me out of the blue, and I don't know, she's from Ohio. And she called me up because she heard that I published a newspaper. And she wanted to start a newspaper in her. She wanted to know about printers and this, that. But before you know it, me and her was on the phone for 2.5 hours. And I was sharing, you know, some of the do's and don'ts, because I love the idea that she reached out to me, because, like I said, we own less than 1% of the media. And when I hear somebody else who, especially in print media, I will pour out everything I got on them, because, like I said, we are so rare. And the black press that we do have is, like I said, are kept. Now some of them even selling out. But based on her conversation, her heart seemed to be in the right place. She wants to help people and do all of these things. So I gave her quite a few suggestions. But I have a strong suspicion that she's going to be one of our team members real soon. She already kind of said it, but it's not until we make that transition of commitment that she's coming on board. But the point is, you see, people are hearing about us, and then she said before she even called me, she went on to the website to look at what we do, and she went to the archives, and when she saw you all the different stuff that you all are doing, she was extremely, extremely impressed. And so what I'm about to say is this. And based on Colin Powell, the work that he's done, you know, to me personally, I should say job well done. And looking at you all who's on this podcast this evening, I know most of the people on here, and I can say truthfully, job well done. But right now, Colin Powell is gone now, you know, and you know, his legacy, he left a legacy, and he's in the history books, and he won't, you know, this, that. But see, what I'm saying is this. If you're already inside the National Black Unity News, you are ready right now. Everybody on who's in this last issue is now you sitting up in the library, because this is where this paper go to. The first place it goes to is them. So you in the Library of Congress, and your children, your grandchildren, your great 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 grandchildren can find you there if they was looking for you. But another thing is too, do you know even what we're doing right now? It's called going viral sometimes. And see, once you put stuff out there in the internet, it's just like in space, it just don't never go anywhere. It's there. And you ain't going to take it off of there. Nobody can take it and just do something they can try. But you never know who got it here. It just goes places. It's like energy. It's here, there, and everywhere. And you just can't do nothing to it. You can try to stop something. But that's what you're doing. Even when you was talking on this thing right here, this conversation here, won't be heard if they were seeking it. from your great-great-great-great-grandchildren. They actually can see you speaking on things. Right now, just what we're doing, this is how powerful media is today. In newspapers, I got people right now, and I published over 40 years. I published so many papers. I had 2 issues of my form of the Informer newspaper. 2 issues. All them years of published. And everything that I had them on, what they used to call them, cassettes. And stuff you used to put in your computer for you new schoolers. You know, used to have little things called cassettes. You put it in your computer and it would record like a thumb drive almost. And people, you know, back in the day, we had plenty of those things in the office because computers wouldn't hold but so much. But all of them old things is on them things. And right now, there's no place to plug them into now. Because these computers don't accept them things no more. So, and even if they still good, I don't know if they rotten out or anything on the inside. But, you know, but all, I don't have my old issues. But it's out there. And somebody got issues of them. But see, because the internet wasn't around most during that time, see, that some of them things will be lost forever. You know, as far as I'm concerned, you know, if people don't come and give me a copy of them, that's gone. It's gone, if you know. But in any case, but what we do today, every issue of this National Black Unity News is here to stay. It's already gone viral. We don't know who's watching, who's listening, who's looking at it. But the young lady said to me, like so many of us said, I just met her this morning. And she said she went through the stuff. And she said, like the rest of her, I love this paper. Just like, I mean, I just, you know, it's like confirmation. We're on the right track because everybody on here wants to serve and help people. And so I'm just going to say to you that this, one of the most, in closing, please be on the call tomorrow because I'm going to tell you why. Some things I just said about the newspapers, it goes here and this there, but you know where the real magic is the people behind the scenes, the Dr. Watises, the Satavis, the Murphys, and the Thomases, the McKenzies, and the Silvers now that just joined us, and you got all of these people, hearts in the right place. And I don't think nowhere, matter of fact, you can't get it nowhere but here. See, this group of people that has come together for the sole purpose of uplifting us. And so that's why I'm encouraging when people hear this podcast throughout this week, I told you this paper by divine inspiration. And I believe by divine inspiration that we're ready to go to another level. A serious level. We're going, you know, a lot of you are going to be called on. We're going to do podcasts. And even on Wednesday night, we're going to be doing the part. Anybody interested in doing the podcast, be on it because we are ready to start escalating. I'm beginning to feel like General Colin Powell right now. You know, we're going to be strategizing because I have great minds around me. And when we put our minds together, you know, just like the National Black Unity, all kinds of things going to come out. Many of you say you're going to write books. So many of you have already written your books. Many of you are going to be doing podcasts. And many of you are going to continue with the National Black Unity News. Our whole world is going to be changing. You're going viral. Your name is out there. And most important, you're leaving a legacy right now. Brother, you know, your legacy is being, you know, like I say, your great-great-grandchildren can see some of the things that you were thinking, some of the things that you are doing. And so this is no joke. Like I say, media is a powerful, powerful tool. And now you're in a powerful situation. And, you know, so just be careful, be alert because, and be prepared. And I want you to know this, you know, what we do, me and Mr. Murphy will talk, we meet every Monday morning and Vernon. And Bill Gooden. And we talk about things. But one of the things we talk about this morning was our culture, the people behind the scenes. And we're going to, you know, we're going to reach out to some of our other family members. So a lot of you have not even met yet, but they're constantly in the paper, though, because they're here, there, they're doing a lot of things. But the work that they have put in there, you know, we need everybody on board right now. Because we have so many services that can not only enhance each other, just like Mr. James Civil and Sonya Williams was on last week. You know, they brought some valuable information to us, serious stuff. And Mr. Silver, I need to talk to you about that as well. And so, you know, me and you, call me tomorrow. Let's set up an appointment so we can talk about, you know, your services.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
But just what Mr. Silver did with us last week, talking about legacy building, talking about leaving inheritance to our children and our children's children. Stopping us from blood, sweat, heartaches, you know, from what the service he provides. But in any case, in closing, is this. If you with us, I strongly suggest that you try to be on these calls. It's a reason for it. Because we don't know what happens. You can ask Ms. Kathleen Murphy or so sometime. We'll have a guest speaker, and we'll do this. And then all of a sudden, somebody will say something, might be going through a little something. And then all of a sudden, the conversations go to another level. And next thing, that's where you see the real magic come out. Then you see the support system come up. You'll feel that family type atmosphere. That's part of the culture. That's why I strongly suggest, especially on Tuesdays, that you get on those calls, because even your contribution, everybody brings something to the table. But if we don't open up and we don't share, we will never know. So even some of our family members, they don't speak up too much sometimes, but we're going to call on you to start speaking up. It's important. Because all of us, when we go out into the vineyard in our own community, our own networks, you know, we need to know who's with us, because somebody may need you and they can recommend you. So, you know, just prepare yourself to, you know, be one of the guest speakers, and you know you're amongst family. And so, again, thank each and every one of you for your participation. And I'll hopefully see you all tomorrow night at 7:30. We'll send a link out to you. We don't share that link with people because we don't want people coming in. That's why we don't have too many people on this, because we only share with kind of in-house people. This the Zoom call I'm talking about, because we have been bombed several times, you know, people, you know, because we was growing pretty good, and then, you know, the enemy steps in and, you know, do all kinds of crazy stuff to you. But again, thank each and every one of you. And for those, Mr. Silver, who shared, Brother Satavi Jahi, Mr. Walter Dempsey Murphy, Ms. Kathleen Murphy, thank you for your service, in the service. Thank you for your contribution to the call tonight. It was valuable. It confirmed some things for me, because hearing from y'all is confirmation. That's how much faith and trust I have in y'all. But see, based on y'all words alone, solidify what I was thinking in the first place. This man was a tough man. This man wasn't no joke. Man, I'm serious. To even get to, I already knew not to get to where he was, but to hear it from the troops themselves, man, that's powerful stuff, man. And I know sometimes, you know, he probably gets it all the time, but if he really knew sometimes how much respect that people have from people that he never even met himself in the military, never met in his life personally, but the respect that he earned from, you know. So I thank you, brother. Thank God for him. May he rest in peace and in power. And I'm going to say good night to y'all. Thank y'all. Take care.
Good night, everyone. Thank you, David. Good night, everyone. Thanks, everyone. You guys for the service. Thank you.
Good night, everyone. Thank you. Peace and blessings.
Goodbye.